Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's time for another Colt Schnero chat. We have just pressed record on this Monday morning. It's Labor Day in the U.S. I'm Jeremy. I'm joined by Robbie, who is over in Spain, and we are going to be discussing a couple of games, actually, Robbie. We're going to be reviewing Atletico's game at Real Sociedad on Saturday, tinged with controversy, I think you can say. And then later on in the show, we will be previewing the Champions League group stage opener against Porto at the Metropolitano on Wednesday. So, Robbie, let's get started. First of all, how you doing? It's been a couple weeks since we've reconvened.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks a million, Jeremy, and hello to everyone listening. I'm doing good and excited for. I understand that the season is kind of condensed in that. It's fun from a fan and a fan and a writer's perspective, but it's not ideal in terms of players' health and players being at 100%. But as I said, for a fan and for someone who watches the games, it's a pretty cool deal we've got here, you know.
I would argue it's not going to be great for the writer's health either, because from here until the World Cup, man, we've got games every 3 days, pretty much.
Yeah. It's gonna be very interesting.
Yeah. By like mid-October, I'm gonna be feeling the burn, so to speak. But anyway, that's in the far future. Let's stick to the present and actually go back a couple of days to Saturday evening at Real Arena in San Sebastian. It finished 1-1 between Real Sociedad and Atletico Madrid. I think a few different places we can start here, Robbie. But your general thoughts on what we saw on Saturday, aside from the refereeing controversies?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty much took down the pattern of a lot of Atletico's games now, and it reflected a lot of what we saw last year, and it doesn't do a whole lot to kind of ease your concerns about Atletico's Atletico's hopes this season to challenge for silverware.
I think that's a pretty succinct summary of what we saw. You know, and I don't think, from a general point of view, there's not a whole lot to add on to that. I think we talked about this at the very start of the season, Robbie, when you have a squad with, you retained 80%, 85% of an underachieving squad, you're probably going to continue to get underwhelming performances and results. I thought parts of what Atletico did on Saturday were good. I think the first half, from Atleti's point of view, was pretty solid. I think that they easily could have gone 2-0 up at halftime, but João Felix had the handball that ruled out Alvaro Morata's second goal. Jose Jimenez smacked a shot off the woodwork from a long ways out. Alex Romero actually saved it very impressively. But the second half was a different story, and Atleti's performance dropped off even just slightly, and that opened the door for Umar Sadiq's equalizer. That opened the door for all the complaints about Soto Grado's refereeing. But at the end of the day, I think you and I can agree that Atleti probably weren't good enough to take all 3 points here anyway. But when the perception is you're playing against the opposing team and the opposing referee and VAR official, that's what has made fans very upset about this result in particular.
Yeah, but I don't really even get. Maybe I missed it, but I don't understand what the issue was. What's the problem? I don't know what the problem is, to be honest with you.
Well, there have been complaints about a couple of different things. It started in the first half when Marcos Llorente picked up a yellow card for arguing with Momo Cho, who just killed Atletico on the night, by the way. That he looks like a pretty exceptional young talent. He looks really good.
The two of those players are booked for that, no?
Yeah, they both got booked. Llorente was not as demonstrative as Cho, so there was, I think, some surprise that Llorente got booked as well. And in the second half, Sidic's goal.
I'm not having a go at you here. I'm just saying I have no issue with that. You see that all the time.
All the time.
There's two players involved. Both of them get booked. No problem.
Yeah, what's just discipline. The referee's got to do that. I think that's a less egregious isn't the word I want to use, but that's a less noteworthy incident. Umar Sadiq's equalizer went off his arm. You know, he heads the ball down off his shoulder, off his arm, and in, and it doesn't even go to VAR. Morata's goal, which was chalked off in the first half, that went to VAR after a pretty clear João Félix handball in the box. Okay, that's fine. But Sadiq's goal doesn't even go to replay review, which is a bit strange. And then in the 96th minute, when Correa has a potential 1v1 opportunity in the penalty area, Sotogrado immediately blows up for a foul outside the area. I think it was Marino on Griezmann. Instead of playing advantage, he blows up immediately for the free kick. So those are the two calls in particular that have, at least on Atleti Twitter that I've seen, there are a lot of very upset folks. And after the game, Koke, Witsel, Morata all spoke to the club and said, we deserve more than 1 point. This is ridiculous. The referees give us a talk before the season, every season, and then what's applied is different from what they say. Tomas Mañones, who's the club liaison at Atletico, he spoke to the official social media channels and went on this really impressive 3-minute rant about the referees and about the refereeing committee. That is worth viewing if you haven't viewed it yet, dear listener. But yeah, I think in a nutshell, those are the refereeing controversies. The Sadiq one in particular, I wouldn't say it gnawed at me, but I think it's a little ridiculous. It didn't even go to review.
Yeah, man. To be honest with you, I see absolutely no problem with either of those decisions.
Really?
Like whatsoever. I think, Sadiq quite clearly had his hand in and just kind of knocked it in with his body more than reaching an arm out to .
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just see absolutely no. I see no problem. I see no problem with that. I don't see. I don't know. I think it's Atletico Madrid complaining because they haven't done enough to win the game. To be honest with you, I think the João Félix one is quite clear. He lifts his arm up.
Yeah,
they're two separate things. Those two are completely fair. Blowing it up outside the box for the free, I understand the complaints about that, but the tackle was bad and the referee just kind of got excited. Okay, look, we can crucify the man for that, but he just saw the foul and was like, oh, blow it. There was nothing malicious in his desire to screw Atletico over for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think any complaints are basically. And I understand Atletico's point here. They're trying to just kind of, it's the same as what like Real Madrid do, and then they complain about the ref just to, so that they'll get the next one. And that's fine too. But I just think that it's Atletico Madrid have a world-class team. They've got a world-class team, a world-class attack. They've got this Spain number 9 and a €126 million youngster. They've got a machine of a midfielder in Rodrigo de Paul, Koke and Saul, whatever. Llorente, who was arguably one of the most impactful players. The speed, the athleticism, the threat from that side. They've got an amazing team, and they just can't go out and they won't go out and play and take the game to the opponent. Instead, they're sitting back in this defensive shape, long balls forward, hoping to win the second ball, and then you're leaving it to chance with referee, little pokey decisions, and you're going out. Like, it's just like, is this what it's come to? Is this what it has come to? Like, I mean, and Atletico are, okay, they're not out of the title race yet, but based on form, based on what we've seen, they're not winning the league this year.
Yeah, they basically already are, yeah.
And here we are sitting talking about a referee's, I mean, and I say this all the time in terms of referee, can I understand, I'm not trying to be yes or no, black and white, can I understand what he was doing? 100%. Mm-hmm. Joe Felix handled the ball in the build-up to the goal. 99 times out of 100, that's given. Omar Sadiq, firstly, Reinildo misjudged it. I shouldn't have let him get that. Sadiq just kind of throws himself at it. His hand is in by his side, and he just kind of knocks it in with his kind of shoulder body. That's given. And it's such a low scoring game that I think that, like, you look at the Premier League this weekend, and they're just looking for any reason to give away, to not give the goal, any reason.
Yeah.
And it can't be like that. And I just think that, look, I mean, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. It's ridiculous from the players, Atletico players, and they're just clutching at straws after a game, another game where they didn't do enough to win. They're under the cosh against a side who they tower over in terms of in financially, and who they should be beating. We'll say 8 times out of 10, and they haven't done enough again. And they're relying then on a couple of substitutions to come on, and when they did actually come on, Correa, Griezmann come on, and Atletico actually started playing a little bit in that last 10 minutes. Real Sociedad rattled.
They were.
Real Sociedad were playing down the time. Why don't you play like that all the time? I don't want to hear it about referees, because it's absolute nonsense. Especially when they're not, like, you get some decisions that are literally baffling, and I'm like, let's talk about that, because I want to get inside the mind of the ref and say, why did he do that? But then, even at that, they make mistakes. Like, it's not everything is this conspiracy theory against your team.
No,
but I know
right.
The stakes are high. And I just think it's ridiculous, and it's embarrassing from the club, to be honest with you. And that's it. I mean, you've got enough players there to, I don't know. I just don't think. To be honest with you, I think that football is in a weird place at the moment in terms of refereeing, in terms of and that's not just in Spain. I think all over. I think the refs are. It's weird because the refs are kind of trying to let it flow. You can see that they're letting a lot of the stuff go, but then they're blowing for bizarre things and letting bigger fouls go. Mm-hmm. Like Morata, I would have more problem. Morata was pulled to the ground a couple of times. I'd actually be more like that, and he was getting so frustrated.
Yeah, Lenormand pulled him down in the area.
Twice.
Yep.
Well, even just attacks that came to nothing because he was pulled to the ground. That may be more than the other ones, but like even at that, like I mean, the ref, the state of refereeing at the moment is poor for every team, and I just think that Atletico need to do more. And I think I'd prefer to focus. Although having said that, focusing on what Atletico aren't doing right is just going to be another rant, me talking about how Simeone doesn't know what he's doing with this team. and
damn.
So which one do you want to pick?
Wow, you have come into this show just firing from every possible angle. This is great. No, but I think your general point that Atletico weren't good enough anyway, I think you and I agree on that. That if you're not good enough and you open yourself up to refereeing decisions influencing the game, then you need to reevaluate and have more self-criticism. And that's what frustrated me about Koke's post-game comments, is that there just wasn't enough autocritica, you know, there just wasn't enough self-criticism and desire for self-improvement. Like, you can talk about the 9 yellow cards that were shown in this game. There were more yellow cards for La Real players than Atletico players, for what it's worth. But you said something about how Atletico dominated the game in the final stages, and I think that is concurrent with Antoine Griezmann's entry into the game. La Real did not have a shot attempt, the final a shot attempt on goal in the final half hour. Momo Cho's left-footed effort on the hour was the last shot that made its way to Oblak, or Ivo Gerbic after Oblak went out injured. Atletico were very, very good the final 25 minutes or so, once Griezmann came on for his allotted half an hour of game time. Seven progressive passes for Griezmann in just about 28 minutes. Racked up a lot of progressive distance, four progressive carries. What have you made of this, the club politics here, Robbie, of Griezmann only playing 28, 29 minutes for the time being?
Yeah, I think basically they're probably just trying to get trying to force Barcelona into negotiations, because if Barcelona see these guys aren't gonna, they're just gonna play the technicality in the contract, and we're not gonna get anything for them. They'll go back to the table and be like, okay, look, just give us 10 million now and that's it, and you can play him whenever. But I think it's quite petty from Atletico, but at the same time I can understand their point in that they don't have 40 million to be paying any club for a player, for regardless of who he is or what stature he holds at a club, or what he can do for your team. And well, I don't really like it from the point of view that like Florentino Perez was often criticised for, oh, he's picking the team, he has influence in the team. Like, Simeone is literally being given a rule here.
Yeah.
He's not he can't come on from before 60 minutes. And that automatically, you're going in here, right, we've got a 23-man squad, but no, wait a minute, we don't. We've got a 22-man squad until the 60th minute, and then what we'll do is that's not ideal. Now, on the point that I understand Atletico's point of view, I don't really know what Javier Tebas is trying to do in terms of, he's trying to even out the league, and he's trying to protect teams from themselves in terms of spending and overspending. So he's kind of he's betting on this football, the current climate of spending, transfers, buying your way out of trouble. He's betting on it being a bubble, and he's betting on that bubble bursting. The problem is, he's also hamstringing La Liga teams. Like, you look at he's done a great work in terms of evening out the distribution of TV rights. Great.
Yeah.
But they're not a great example because they're linked with Man City. But you look at Almeria.
Almeria run by a sheik.
Who's the third team to come up this season? Almeria.
Valladolid.
And Valladolid.
Yeah.
Like you look at the money that they've spent, and even Almeria, like, they had to sell to.
They sold City.
There's clubs down at the bottom who there's clubs here who've only spent like a million in the transfer market, and I'm not saying that transfers are the be all and end all, and we probably have gotten a little bit over reliant on transfers, or coaches have probably got a little bit over reliant on transfers to fix problems when it should be just better coaching. But like, when you're spending a million versus clubs who are going spending 60, 70, 80, 90 million, and Barcelona a lot more than that.
Yeah.
You're basically condemning them to, like, you get a club coming up from the Segunda and they need reinforcements. Like, we look at Nottingham Forest this summer, and they signed, I think it was something ridiculous, like 14 players.
They signed 20 players, a literal squad's worth of players.
A squad's worth of players, because winning, but getting promoted from the second division does not necessarily mean that you've got a squad that's anywhere nearly ready to compete. So it's kind of a weird way of hamstringing those other teams as well. And I don't know at what point does Javier Tebas's remit or does his what's it called? Is he overstepping his boundaries here in terms of, if Real Betis want to spend 200 million and go bankrupt, that's up to them.
That should be
their
right.
And I understand that Betis fans listen to this. I bet his fans listening to this are going to be like, oh no, we don't want to go bankrupt. But like, as and they, these are institutions that are embedded in the cities that they're in, and there's so much history, and there is, I do appreciate the effort to protect them, but at the same time, if Atletico want to spend 40 million, or if they want to spend money on someone, and then they go and they end up in the second division in 5 years or 3 years because of that, like, why is Javier Tebas trying to stop that? And I just don't know, and I'm not saying that that's a definitive answer, as in I'm on either side of it. I'm just trying to figure out, where does his boundary end, and when does his what's the word I'm looking for? Where does his
authority end, right?
End, or where does his,
yeah, like his,
yeah, at what point does his, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. It's also something I wanted to talk about today, Robbie, is this idea that we're throwing it back 10 years in La Liga, right? My perception is that there are two absolutely overwhelming teams at the top in Madrid and Barcelona, and those are the only two clubs who were really able to spend this summer. And Barca were only able to do it by, you know, the palancas, by activating the economic levers. They ended up doing four or five of them, selling off all this future revenue and possible earnings to be good now and to register really good players now, which they've done. But to me, it's not as interesting when we have a two-horse race. It's not as interesting when we have Madrid and Barca in a 95-point league and no one else will crack 80 points. Like, Atletico could easily finish third this year, but still finish 20 points off the top, and that's not good. Part of what has made La Liga, to me, uniquely compelling in the last few years is that we've had three different title winners. We had Barca win it in 2019, and Madrid the year after that, Atletico the year after that. In England, I know it's only September 5th, but Man City look really good. They look as if they're primed to win a fifth Premier League title in 6 years. Bayern are on their way to an 11th Bundesliga crown in a row, it looks like. Serie A's got, you know, the Milan teams and Juventus, Napoli as well. That could be an interesting race in Serie A again. But I think the financial controls, when they were implemented in 2013, when Tebas became the president, great idea. You want parity in the league. You want the TV rights money distributed. You want this revenue doled out more evenly, more equally, in a more equitable manner for 90% of the teams that, unlike Madrid and Barcelona, can't necessarily take care of themselves, quote-unquote, right? And I feel like we're throwing it back to 2010, 2011, 2012. In one of those years, like, Valencia finished third on 61 points, and they were 30 points off second place. I feel like we are dangerously close to re-entering that territory, and it's not good for the league. And I think it should prompt a re-evaluation of the financial controls. Like, the Premier League brings in, what, 4 billion euro, 4 billion quid for their TV rights deals. La Liga, about half of that. Like, there's only so many ways you can make up that gap. And one fundamental reason why that gap is what it is because one league speaks English, the other does not. I think that's just kind of a reality. And I'm not saying that makes one bad and the other good. It's just a lot of people speak English. But you and I have talked before about investing in analytics, investing in sports science, investing in video, film review, coaching, finding smaller minutiae in order to pull one over on your opponent. But money talks. Like, Nottingham Forest literally acquired 20 players this summer. 20! Like, that's not, something is not right with the football as a whole, the football economy as a whole. But in La Liga, I think something can be done about this. I don't like this feeling. Barcelona already have a plus 10 goal difference in four games. They drilled Sevilla the other night. I know Sevilla have a ton of problems, but they just absolutely drilled them. I feel like we're throwing it back a decade, and I don't like it. It's not as interesting to me.
Yeah, and like you said there about the scouting and what we've seen with Sevilla, for example, you might catch them. You might catch these teams that bottomless pockets for 2 or 3 years, but eventually you're gonna, that competitive edge is gonna wear off and you're screwed again, and you're constantly, you have to rebuild, and it's 3 years of, or 2 years of rebuilding, which is exactly what Sevilla are kind of doing right now, in terms of they've overachieved with Lopetegui, and they're having to pare it back down again, because they were kind of going with the flow of how well Lopetegui was doing with them, and they were like Champions League. But the reality is, Monchi is like, we can't compete here. We can't. Even the kind of fake title run last season, where they were like possibly gonna keep up with Madrid and that, like, even that was something Monchi was probably looking at going, this is ridiculous, like, we're nowhere nearly as good as this team, and you end up kind of, some teams end up falling for that and being like, oh yeah, we're up there with them. You're not. Things have gone your way, you're on a good run, but you're not, and the sooner you realise you're not in the same league as them, the better for the health of your club. And I just think, yeah, to be honest with you, I really, really don't know. Like, I mean, I'm in lots of WhatsApp groups with different groups of friends and all, and each and every one of them, it's just kind of talking about the money and the disadvantages and the games that are just foregone conclusions, like, you know. I don't know. I mean, that's just, and then the constant talk about the farmers' leagues, and yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know where you go. Like, I mean, there's only so much scouting and data can help you when the odds aren't even to begin with. Like, the data and the scouting might help you in like a 5%, but it's not pulling you back from. You're not a league one team might catch PSG on the hop one year, but you're not doing it consistently. And another team is going to have to come through then. I don't know. I just think, football's in a kind of a weird space, and you just have to, for me, and I, like, there's been a lot of talk about the Bundesliga, and I understand that Bayern have drawn their last two now, and it's like, oh, there's the talk of a title.
No, there's not. There's not a title race there.
Yeah, like, I don't know, but they've won the last, for the last decade, they've won, so I'm just saying, like, and there's a lot of people saying that's not even a competition. When you win it that many times in a row with as many points to spare as they have, it ceases to be a competition. And I wonder, like, I think you just have to find enjoyment in the act of watching the sport for the sake of watching the sport, and seeing young players develop and new coaches coming through, and how your team is doing and how they did against these guys, and maybe when they do play the big boys, you just hope that they can manage to like we saw Rayo against Barcelona, like, just hanging on for dear life, and just everything went their way and they got a result. But back to the point about Atletico, like, we're talking here as if Atletico, or no, sorry, I don't know if we are or not, but I don't want to give the impression here that Atletico should be let off the hook here either. It's not like they've a team full of nobodies. Like, they've got a seriously impressive team, and I just think that, back to a lot of my points I made last season, is that it doesn't really look, and to be honest with you, I've noticed, maybe I don't know why, or maybe I'm listening to different people now, but I just noticed that there's a little bit more criticism being aimed at Simeone now, and it's against Valencia we saw it, and like, Simeone's Atletico are supposed to be the intensity, like, that's supposed to be their thing, but Valencia just wiped the floor with them on that front. Now Valencia got really, really tired at the end, because they're not really used to playing like that. It'll probably take them a while to figure out exactly, and well, we saw it last night,
yeah, and then they just against hammered Getafe with a great goal from Samuelino, by the way, on loan from Atleti.
Yeah, man, he looks good.
He looks like a player.
But yeah, so my point is that, what?
You were saying about Simeone.
Yeah, sorry. So their thing is supposed to be intensity, but we saw against Valencia that they couldn't keep up for the first hour. It was Valencia who were really going at them, and the same again the other night with Real Sociedad. It was Real Sociedad that were kind of causing them problems, and Atletico were sitting back and second to a lot of balls and stuff. So when you start to lose that as well, and then and another thing which doesn't really, I know that Atletico are this hard-edged team, but like, just a lack of discipline as well, it isn't really a great sign. And you know, like, Saul probably could have been, they're a great example, why aren't we talking about Saul's elbow to David Silva? Why didn't that go? They were 100% yellow cards in the first week of the season. We saw a penalty given for it. We saw a bunch of yellow cards. Yao Felix was given a... Marat, I think, was given a yellow for the exact same thing. That kind of just flailing arm. And Saul caught David Silva. Caught him with a sharp, bony part of the elbow. Like, that's in the first half, and he's on thin ice, and all of a sudden Simeone is having to make a decision here at half time. And I understand that Saul probably would have been one of the first players to go anyway, but when you're giving him no option, and it's like, look, you've kind of backed me into a corner here, I have to take you out because the next tackle you're gone. And same with Rodrigo de Paul. I mean, he's just constantly skating thin ice, and I just think he needs to get smarter with his tackles. Like, we talk about Casemiro being this kind of guru of not getting cards. De Paul is the exact opposite of that. He even said it to ref. He put his finger up. He's like, that's my first one. And it's like, yeah, but you need to ease your way into it. Just kind of a little nibble here, a little nibble there. Don't go fully in.
Yeah, that's what Casemiro is a good example of that. That's what he's gotten away with for a long time. Is just, you know, one or two tackles here. Just let the opponent know you're there. You won't get booked for the first couple. Like, you get freebies. DePaul just launches into tackles.
Exactly.
You know, you just go Saul too.
All of a sudden with Casemiro and the refs, it becomes a game of cat and mouse. You get the first one, okay, and the ref is looking at you, and you're like, oh yeah, and you kind of look at him, and you're like, nah, not really, ref, you know, okay, go ahead. Next one, a little bit lighter, like a little bit of a tug of the jersey, or a little kind of a push, and you're looking at the ref, ref, come on, you're being hard on me now, ref, come on. And then all of a sudden, you give your third free, and you're like, ref, now you get the last one you gave to him, but that one, come on, like, that was never a free. And the ref all of a sudden is like, ah, yeah, man, it's a psychological warfare. Then the ref is looking at you going, I feel like maybe I am picking on this guy a bit, yeah, and all of a sudden, like, it becomes a thing, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then Casemiro, he's seven fouls into the game, it's 70 minutes, he pulls the guy down, and the ref's like, okay, I'm gonna have to bug this guy. It's not quite a red card, but I just had to book him because it's like an orange card, but I can't give. And then all of a sudden he's after fouling the player eight times, each of them, none of them really that bad. He's made it 80 minutes or 75 minutes into the game before he got his card, and even then he's looking at the ref going, wow, ref was borderline, you know. Whereas Rodrigo de Paul launches in 10 minutes and all of a sudden you're marked. The referee is looking at you going, this guy doesn't even know how to tackle, I'm watching him. And sorry, even before that, these guys know who Rodrigo de Paul is. They know. They're watching it. And they're just like, it's kind of like Bruno Fernandes. He's just constantly talking, constantly getting involved in this dialect with the referee and the players. And it's just like, man, focus on your game. Like, you know, you're not really playing that well.
De Paul shouldn't even be called upon to make tackles like this anyway. That's not what he's best at. Like, he's being asked to do things that he's not good at doing. Let's just be frank about it. When De Paul was at Udinese, that team was built around him. It was built around his passing. It was built around his late runs into the box. His last season at Udinese, he had, 17 or 18 goal involvements. He's had, I think, three or four since joining Atletico. And he played another pretty ineffectual hour on Saturday. Only 20 touches, only 11 passes attempted. He's off after 62 minutes for Griezmann, who had a much more significant impact as an interior midfielder. So I once again wonder what it is that De Paul offers Atletico. I know he can offer more. We've seen it at Udinese. We've certainly seen it when he plays for Argentina. But at Atletico, and man, I think this also goes back to your point about Simeone, is that the plan still isn't clear. I think we can say Cholo doesn't have enough pieces, but he has plenty of pieces here to make this work. And, you know, they've already dropped 2 points in four games. They had a really disappointing season last year with a lot of these same concerns that we're talking about. Players playing out of position. Axel Witsel has been playing at center back all season. I think he's been doing pretty good. So far, he completed 96% of his passes on Saturday. I'd say his stock is up. But, you know, Witsel's being played out of position. Reynildo's being played out of position. He came over as a left back. He's now playing as a left-sided center back. Llorente's playing at right back. He might actually be a better right back than a midfielder, honestly. Mario Hermoso comes in. He's basically playing as a left back. Griezmann's playing as a midfielder. Sowell's playing at midfield, and he's also playing at left wing back. There's something to be said for having a versatile team with players who can play in multiple positions, but if you're playing everyone at their second best position, you're going to get second best performances. That's kind of what I think. And credit to La Real as well. Emmanuel Alguacil is one of the best coaches in La Liga. He's been there for 4 years now. He's shown that he's very adaptable. His teams play an attractive style. They played a 4-diamond-2 on Saturday that did give Atleti quite a few problems. I mentioned Momo Cho earlier. David Silva at 36, almost 37, Robbie, is still so classy. He still has such quality on the ball. Bryce Mendez, I think, was a really smart signing for them. Mikel Merino and Robin Lenormand are among the best in the league at their positions. Alex Romero as well. They're a good team. So, you know, this is... If you want to compete for the title, this is one I think you have to win. But, you know, Atletico aren't competing for the title this year. So, yeah, you take the point and you get vent your frustrations about the officiating and you move on.
Yeah, exactly. That seems to be the way to go, yeah.
Yeah. Atletico do have some injury problems, though, which you will not be surprised to learn, Robbie. Jan Oblak got knocked out late in the game. He had to exit in the final 5 minutes after a bit of friendly fire. Reynildo accidentally took him out with a slide tackle, trying to cut out a Take Kubo pass to Sadiq in the penalty area. He is going to be out for the Porto game on Wednesday, which is a good opportunity for us to switch gears. No Oblak. Tomalema is expected to play after a muscle... after a bruise ruled him out of the game on Saturday. I think, you know, Atletico faced Porto last season, Robbie, in the group stage. That second game in Porto was box office. That was a lot of fun. This group, on paper, Robbie, this group appears winnable. Porto have had a really good 2022. They just dominated the Portuguese league on their way to the title last year. They're currently third in the Primeira Liga as we speak. But, you know, the group stage draw last month was pretty kind for Atletico, certainly relative to recent years. And, you know, it's a good opportunity to get some momentum going. And the cup competitions are their best shot at winning silverware this year. I don't think there's any question.
Yeah, definitely. And it's going to be heart attack inducing group stage, because some really good games there. Bayer Leverkusen have got a coach. I just happened to watch them a couple of times, and they've got a really good coach. He's Spanish Swiss national he's excellent, plays really attacking. Actually might suit Atletico in terms of being able to kind of take advantage of winning the ball back off them and a counter-attacking. But I haven't seen too much of Porto, to be honest with you, so I can't really say much about that. But based off what the experts and the probabilities of winning are, it looks like it's a really, really open, even group. And Atletico, it definitely could have been a lot worse for Atletico, yeah.
Yeah, like they could have drawn Bayern, they could have drawn Man City, they could have drawn PSG. It could have been a lot worse for them. They genuinely have a chance to win their group for the first time since 2016. That's a long time. And Porto retained a lot of the players from last year's squad. They've got 4 wins and a loss so far in domestic action. Mehdi Taremi is their top goal scorer with 3 so far in 5 games. 0.7 goals per 90, that's a pretty decent rate. And yeah, Atletico, I think, will look forward to the opportunity to return home. I think we also have to keep in mind, this is Mestalla and Real Arena inside the first 5 weeks of the season. That's tough. It doesn't excuse the, you know, Atleti weren't impressive at Mestalla, and they stole that one anyway. They weren't all that impressive at Anoeta, and, you know, they finished 1-1. So I think they will look forward to the opportunity to play at home, play in a cup competition, And it breeds confidence. You know, João Félix usually shows up for these games. He's a former Porto Academy graduate. I think he'll be up for this one. He hasn't had a goal involvement since match day one of La Liga. So I'm backing him to get on the score sheet.
He should have had an assist for Angel Correa at the end of the Sociedad game.
Oh, yes.
Lovely ball, and Correa and Felix was really, really upset as well after that.
He was, yeah.
So, yeah, Yeah, no, I think Joe Felix, when he's let play and he gets chances, he's kind of developed, or maybe he had it all along, but we've definitely seen way more personality from him. So, and yeah, you're right. I think he likes the big stage, so definitely gonna be excited to watch him this season in the Champions League.
He gets fouled so much. The stat I saw on social media this weekend was he's now been fouled, Robbie, 13 times in 326 minutes in La Liga. Like, you know, the best players find their way out of that. The best players don't let it get to them, but he still lets it get to him, I think. He still gets frustrated by the grabbing, the tugging, especially the swipes at his ankles, which we know are a bit fragile.
I think he's a bit like Neymar in that A, he's really, really elusive, so players just kind of have to resort to pulling him down. And I also think sometimes he's quite smart in that when he knows he's got his back to goal and he is he's got no real options, he provokes a free. And I've spoken about this before, but the way that he plays, and he's so quick, and he trusts his ability to beat a player. He waits for the player to make the move, and then he goes. And I think that kind of, he's just a really elusive player, and that provokes a lot of fouls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a huge amount of contact and to be suffering. So hoping he finds a little more space on Wednesday. And also, it's going to be a start for Ivo Grbić, with Oblak out due to a deep bruise he suffered on Saturday. The hope, from what I've read, the hope is that he is back on Saturday against Celta, but he will not play on Wednesday. So Ivo Grbić will get to make his Champions League debut after spending last season out on loan at Lille. It's kind of hard to say because we haven't seen him play much game action for Atletico, but do you think there's going to be a serious step down from Oblak? Do you think that there will be less defensive security, a bit more nerves?
Yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned in the fact that he went to Lille last season and he ended up losing his place, if I'm correct.
Yeah, halfway through the year. Yeah.
Yeah, he lost his place, and maybe he's a good goalie, but you know yourself, goalie, it's all about kind of playing and consistency and understanding the players in front of you and knowing their tendencies. And I think he also probably... Well, coming on for the last 15 or whatever minutes against Real Sociedad, that gave him a chance to kind of get rid of those nerves. But yeah, you could tell he knew this was something that's so rare. Like, Oblak plays every game. You can't possibly be mentally prepared. Like he doesn't. Oblak doesn't get injured, and he doesn't. He plays, so I think it's kind of hard for a goalkeeper to be mentally ready for that. To like. You can say you are, and you can kind of hope you are and stuff like that, and you can do everything you want to prepare yourself, but at the same time, when the moment comes, it's kind of a little bit of a shock to the system. And I think Grbić did have a lot of kind of nervous energy. We could see that in his body movements when he came on against Real Sociedad. There was a ball got sent into the far post, and they kind of tried to test him, and he kind of... He did fine. I mean, he let it go out, but he was a little bit nervous. But yeah, maybe the fact that he's gotten the chance to actually step onto the field as an Atletico player in a La Liga game, and the fact that he is now has the time to a couple of days to prepare. Maybe we won't, but it's just the fact that the being dropped from Lille late last season and then coming back and not playing, and I don't know. Like, I mean, we saw Benjamin Lecomte, for example. He was Jan Oblak's deputy last year and mm-hmm. didn't play any game time, and then we saw him against for Espanyol in the first three games of the season, and he was a disaster start for the man. They had to go out and sign a goalkeeper because he got red card against Real Madrid, and it looks like it looks like he's finished as Diego Martinez's goalkeeper for Espanyol. So just because you're Jan Oblak's deputy doesn't mean you're good. You can't prove it now. So let's see. I don't know.
Yeah,
is my long-winded answer.
I guess we're gonna find out if the extra couple of days of prep will do him good. How would you assess Atletico's chances to perhaps win the Champions League this year, Robbie? Quarterfinal appearance last year, as we discussed earlier, on paper a winnable group, but Atleti like to make things complicated for themselves in the group stage in recent years. How far do you think this team can go? I know it's dependent on matchups, but how would you assess their chances to win the European Cup for the first time?
Well, you just said it there. I mean, it's dependent on matchups, and winning your group is the number one way of getting an easier run. So you just have to kind of finish top of your group. They've had a little bit of luck, and in fairness, Atletico like haven't really been that lucky in terms of draws. And maybe that's just because they're kind of a second tier team. So naturally, they're going to get a Man City or a who have they had recently in their group? They're going to get a Bayern Munich, yeah, or someone in their group that makes them kind of that overshadows them. They've been lucky with the draw, and it's just a matter now of finishing top and then just hoping the chips fall your way. We know, as we saw against Man City last season, there is a big game or two in Atletico. Like, there is, when their backs are to the wall, when we also saw that the best team doesn't always win it. I mean, Man City, the European football is just a completely different game. That knockout football is it has a different vibe to it. Like, I mean, you see City and how they dominate teams in the Premier League and how they dominate teams in the group stages. In knockout football, you think things fall your way on the night, and all of a sudden, and this is what Real Madrid have been able to do so well. They just kind of get a little bit of momentum for 30 minutes in a game. Next thing, they blitz you and it's game over. And so if Atletico can kind of make the path as easy as they can for themselves, there's definitely a big game or two in them, and they've got the players, like I said at the start of the pod, to score the goals when needed. So let's see.
Yeah, you never know. A favorable matchup, a big performance here and there, and before you know it, you're in a semifinal. So we will see what happens. Everyone around the club really wants to win the Champions League because they've come so close in recent years under Simeone. Who knows? Maybe this could be the year. Wearing these home shirts in particular, wearing these wavy home shirts that are extremely unpopular. I think the stat I saw is like they've seen a 40% drop in home shirt sales.
Oh well, yeah, they're not great. Yeah,
no, they're not.
They're really not great.
I like the away shirt though. The black and blue is really sharp.
Yeah. It's just that wavy line on the red one. It's just the waviness, and then the collar isn't great either. So,
the collar's bad. Yeah, be kind of funny if they had a historic season and won silverware wearing this shirt. But you know, stranger things have happened. Yeah. So we'll have to see.
As a man with no style, I'm not very confident in my fashion opinions, but that is not good.
If you're saying it, Robbie, then there must be something to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we are going to leave it there for the time being. Robbie, thank you so much for hopping on the show today, man. Always great to talk to you.
Yeah, no problem. And we'll be chatting every 3 days for the foreseeable future, I guess.
Yeah, I don't want to put a date on it. Yeah, we are going to be doing these pretty frequently, I'd imagine. We will be back midweek to discuss the Porto game at the Civitas Metropolitano. Thank you all for listening and for your continued support. You can follow us on Twitter at Into the Calderon, on Patreon at patreon.com/CultureNeroChat for bonus goodies. And also make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Spotify. You get all new and archived episodes of CultureNeroChat, as well as our sister show, the Partido a Partido podcast. They just dropped a 75-minute preview of Atletico Femenino's season, which is just about to get underway. So make sure you go listen to that. And we will leave it there for now. Thank you all again for listening, and we'll chat with you later this week. Adios.